Wildcat Crime listeners should be aware that this episode contains descriptions of murder and extreme violence and may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, lovely listeners, and welcome to Wildcat Crime, the monthly podcast dedicated to taking a closer look at some of the most infamous crimes to occur at the University of Arizona and within the Wildcat community. Brought to you by the Daily Wildcat and Camp Student Radio. My name is Vanessa Ontiveros, and I'll be your host. Today, we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, heroes. I actually wanted to open this episode by humming the Superman theme song, but I'm pretty sure that would get me sued. In any case, I find the topic of heroes, and not just superheroes, but heroes throughout time and cultures, to be endlessly fascinating. I don't believe in monsters, but as a true crime fan, I spend a lot of time reading and discussing people who do some of the worst things human beings are capable of. But I also like to read and learn about heroes, both real and fictional. People who protect other people from bad guys and make the world a better place and make serious sacrifices to do it. I could talk about heroes all day long, and I will definitely talk about them more in this episode. But the actual subject of today's show, a University of Arizona alumnus who spent years of his life working to protect people and make his community a safer place, and who sacrificed in order to do so, really does not embrace the title of hero.
Yeah, my name is Jay Dobbins, and I am I'm presently retired. I was a federal agent for 27 years, and I retired 5 years ago.
For 2 years, from 2001 to 2003, Jay went undercover and infiltrated the infamous biker gang and criminal syndicate, the Hell's Angels, in an attempt to take them down from the inside. He went so far as to stage a murder in order to become the first undercover agent to successfully become a full member of the Angels, though the Hell's Angels dispute this claim, according to a Daily Wildcat article from 2017 written by Matt Wall entitled "No Hero, No Angel, The Jay Dobbins Story," which was an extremely useful source for today's show. Another source for today's show? As you heard, Jay Dobbins himself. Now, normally on the podcast, I bring in multiple guests to help me understand an event or idea better. But this month, I wanted to try something different. Jay is actually the only person I spoke with for today's episode. Through our conversation, I wanted to get a better sense, not of the hero who gets written about in articles, but of the person, the real person that is Jay Dobbins. Jay Dobbins was born in 1961 in Hammond, Indiana, but he was made in Tucson. According to Jay, this town is where he really grew up, after coming here during his early teens. One day, he would grow up to infiltrate the Hell's Angels, but as a kid, he was the target of many bullies. According to Jay, these childhood experiences of being picked on actually ended up forming the basis of his mantra that he would follow for the rest of his career: stand up to bullies.
Well, you know, as a kid, I got picked on a lot, and I also got teased a lot. I was kind of a little bit of a weirdo, the oddball. You know, like when I was a kid, my face was broken out, and I learned from the victim side of that situation what it felt like to be humiliated at someone else's hands. I felt like what it, I learned what it felt like to be taken advantage of by someone else. I had a personal understanding of what it was like, you know, when there's people out there in the world that somehow make themselves feel better by diminishing someone else. I understood what it felt like to be on the bad side of that equation. And, you know, for a long time, I didn't like it, but there wasn't a lot I could do about it. And then ultimately, I matured mentally and emotionally and physically, and arrived at a point in time in life where I was able to do something about it. And that, in essence, was my mantra as a lawman, is that I took it on myself to stand up for people in our community who either couldn't or wouldn't stand up for themselves. And I took a great amount of pride in doing that, in doing the best I could to defend people, to defend good and innocent people from predators.
All kids have dreams. Some want to be astronauts or ballerinas or Batman or all three. But I'm pretty sure no kid grows up dreaming of taking down a biker gang. That would be a very specific dream for a child to have. Jay told me that he used to dream of being a professional football player when he was young. Jay got a chance to maybe make those dreams a reality during his time at the University of Arizona. He donned a Wildcats uniform and played as a wide receiver in the Pac-10, according to the Daily Wildcat article by Matt Wall that I mentioned earlier. Now, I am not knowledgeable about football in the slightest, but from what I've read about Jay, he was good. When he graduated in 1985, he was the second leading pass catcher in the school's history. He's in the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame and briefly played professional in the Canadian Football League and United States Football League. However, according to Jay himself, he simply wasn't good enough.
I tried. I went to tryouts. I went to the NFL Combine. I prepared myself the best I could. But the people that play the game professionally are just, they're so good. They're so amazingly good. As much success as I had early in my career, I just flat out wasn't good enough to play on the next level.
His time as a football player did prepare him in some ways for his next career, as a special agent for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, or the ATF for short. According to Jay, both his roles as a football player and a special agent required him to work well on a team. It takes a lot of people to successfully catch a football or catch a bad guy.
I think there's numerous similarities, amazing similarities between my experiences as a football player and then my later job as a lawman. I think any team sport teaches us elements of life that directly applied to my later profession. The need to rely on other people, the need to be able to find what the other people around you are good at and capitalize on that. The need to prepare yourself and perform as an individual for the greater good, for the bigger picture of the team or of the agency or of the operation. All those core elements in team sports definitely related and impacted ultimately who and how I became a lawman.
Jay officially joined the ATF in 1987, according to a Tucson Weekly article by Leo W. Banks entitled The Good Guy, which also provided a lot of information for today's episode. 4 days into the job, Jay was shot in the chest. He could have died that day, but he didn't. The agency he was working with rushed him to the University Medical Center, where, according to the Daily Wildcat article, Dr. Richard Carmona, who would one day serve as Surgeon General of the United States under President George W. Bush, operated on him. Jay also could have retired that day.
And I was in the hospital, and there was attorneys lining up at the hospital basically saying to me, you know what $1 million looks like? How about $5 million? Whatever amount of money you want, we will be able to go get for you, because you were placed in a situation that you were not yet prepared for. You were not yet trained for. The government has assumed a huge amount of liability for what's happened to you. And just tell us how much money you want, and we can make sure that you'll never have to work a day in your life. Neither will anybody else in your family. Just tell us how much you want. And my reaction was, and my response was, to get out of my hospital room. I just wanted to get back to work and do what I loved. And to be honest with you, having a bullet go through my chest and surviving it actually empowered me. It didn't discourage me. It made me feel bulletproof. It made me feel invincible, that I had experienced that, and I experienced it so early in my career. And I just couldn't wait to get back and try again and try to do it better.
Having evaded death once already, Jay kept going in his career. During his time in the ATF, he responded to and dealt with a number of violent crimes, including the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles in 1992 and the Columbine High School massacre in 1999. I asked Jay about these incidents because I didn't want to just skip straight from him getting shot in 1987 to his work infiltrating the Hell's Angels in 2001. A lot of accounts of Jay's career gloss over this era in between. And after speaking to him about these events, I sort of understand why. You see, Jay Dobbins versus the Hell's Angels is an easy story to tell. It's the World War II of sting operations. There's a clear good guy and a clear bad guy. There is really nothing redeeming about the Hell's Angels, from what I can tell. They've been accused, and on multiple occasions found guilty of, drug trafficking, murder, rape, all kinds of terrible deeds. The Hell's Angels are everything you could want in a villain, evil and simple. We don't have to think critically about villainizing them. However, when Jay was talking about responding to the riots and Columbine, what really struck me was how the perpetrators in those cases, the rioting residents of South Los Angeles and the school shooters, complicate matters of purely good and purely evil by being so close to their targets, in the sense that they attacked people very much like themselves in many ways. And that meant that they were very much like us in many ways. I think Jay said it a little better.
You know, those kids that went to school that day had no idea what was coming, and they went to school that day to go to class and to socialize with their friends, and then to, go to their activities after class, to go to their sports practice or participate with their clubs. And they were murdered in cold blood by other teenagers. And just the overall sadness and despair in that community has, that never left me. That was the first real big school shooting that we had as a country that we had experienced. And, it was not all that unlike the Oklahoma City bombing, where Timothy McVeigh set off his truck bomb in front of the Murrah Federal Building. It was that reaction of like, oh my goodness, you know what? We are doing this to ourselves. This is internal. This is inspired domestically. These are people that were born and raised in our country, and that are doing this to our people. This wasn't some terrorist from some outside country who was coming here to make a point. These were our people killing our people.
It's so much more scary and less simple when the bad guys are so close to the good guys and the little guys. It makes it hard to tell us all apart. As important as I think it is to examine the idea of heroes, I think it's also important for us to think critically about what makes a villain. But now, let's get into the mission Jay Dobbins is most known for, Operation Black Biscuit. According to another video interview with Dobbins, The name came from the slang for a hockey puck. Fun fact of the day. During our interview, Jay walked me through the formation of the team who would infiltrate the Hells Angels.
The Hells Angels have become amazingly powerful in Arizona, and they were operating with impunity. They were involved in all kinds of criminal activity and were going, to some extent, unchecked. When there was a case agent, a friend of mine, for many years, named Joe Slatella, who decided that he wanted to try to do something about it. So the investigation started, and we started rolling, and we started trying to find out who was at the core of the violence, who was instigating or planning or intending, you know, the violence and the heavy criminal conduct. And so Joe Slatella, who was an amazing, amazing investigator, probably the smartest investigator that I ever crossed paths with in my career, he came to me and asked me to lead the undercover operation.
Jay took on the alias of Jaybird while undercover. Jay had to become Jaybird in many ways. This hard-partying, hard-drinking, hard-hearted friend of a biker gang. During those 2 years, he spent most of his time in his undercover persona. According to Jay, the people who half-ass undercover work are the people who end up dead. Jay ended up going further into the gang than any agent before him. The way the Hells Angels work, Jay told me, is that there is an extremely long initiation process with multiple levels people can exist in. There are associates of the Hells Angels, who are basically anyone with significant contact with the gang. Then there's the hangarounds, which is apparently the official term for it, who are potential members. Both the hangarounds and the full members try to see if they would be a good fit for the Hells Angels. Then a person becomes a prospect, who must follow the club rules, but are not yet official members. The Hells Angels, according to Jay, had a prospecting time of a year, much longer than most other gangs. In order to become a full member, you really have to make an impression. In 2003, the operation was close to ending, and Jay still had not been made a full member of the Hells Angels, despite nearly 2 years of undercover work. At the time, the biggest rival to the Hells Angels in Arizona were the Mongol Motorcycle Gang. Jay decided to use that rivalry to his advantage.
Very early in my association with the Hells Angels, I asked my leadership, if I cross paths with a Mongol, what am I supposed to do? Like, what are your instructions? And the response to me was, it's your job to kill them. That's what we do. And so I held on to that information for a long time. And as the investigation was coming to a close and I still hadn't been made a member, I knew I had to do something outside the box. I knew I had to do something aggressive and dynamic and over the top to try to force their hand. And so what we did is we took a living, breathing member of our task force. We dressed him up in the colors of the Mongols, of the rival. We went out in the desert and we dug a shallow grave and we took this quote unquote victim and duct taped his hands and his feet. We put him in the grave. We had a homicide detective come out and build us a very authentic appearing homicide scene. And then we took evidence of this manufactured murder and took pictures of it and took it back to the Hells Angels to prove to them that we had killed one of their rivals and that we had, committed the ultimate crime on behalf and on the benefit of the Hells Angels.
According to a CNN article by Kelly Arena, Scott Bronstein, and Jim Spellman, entitled "ATF Agent Says He Faked Murder to Get into Hells Angels," the agents used the entrails of a cow to mimic human brains and splashed fake blood all over the place. I saw pictures of the staged murder while researching Jay Dobbins, and in my professional opinion, it really does look very real. Disturbingly so, at least to me. The members of the Hell's Angels must have thought it looked real too, though disturbed is not the word I would use to describe their reaction to the pictures.
There was hugs and kisses, and they put a vest over my back and said, you know, welcome to the gang. You're a Hell's Angel now. You've proven that you're willing to take care of business for our organization, for our gang, and you're a member now. And that's ultimately what put us over the top.
Their reactions a few weeks later, when Operation Black Biscuit ended, was very different. Jay told me it did not take the Hell's Angels very long to figure out who had been the informant. After all, everyone Jaybird had been hanging around were suddenly being arrested. Their former affection towards him quickly turned to hatred. 16 members of the Hell's Angels were brought to trial, according to a different CNN article by Kelly Arena, Scott Braunstein, and Jim Spellman, entitled "Federal Agent Penetrated Hell's Angels, Fears for His Life." There were many more still out there, and they wanted revenge.
You know, the Hell's Angels had issued murder contracts on me. They had shopped murder contracts on me to the Aryan Brotherhood prison gang, to the MS-13 gang. There was threats, documented, verified threats to videotape the gang rape of my wife. There were threats to kidnap and torture my kids. There was a threat out there to, instead of shooting me or causing physical injury to me, to stick me with the AIDS virus and expose me to AIDS. There were some very personal, vile threats.
Jay told me that the reason for the shutdown of Operation Black Biscuit was that people, other agents in the ATF, were starting to get worried that being a full member of the Hell's Angels put him and other agents into too much danger. There was a serious consideration for the safety of the undercover operatives. However, that same concern did not seem to be present after the operation ended and Jay's identity was revealed. According to Jay, these threats were made known to the agency. But rather than defending him, the ATF removed some of the protections in place for Jay. Some of his personal information became known in public records. One night, Jay's family woke up to smoke in their home. Someone had set their house on fire while they were inside. His family escaped, but the fire destroyed the home.
And instead of reacting to the arson, instead of investigating the arson, those same corrupt executives tried to cover their mistake of pulling the documents away by framing me as the arsonist of my own home. And in doing so, they thus accused me of being willing to murder my own wife and kids by a fire.
The fire was pretty much the last straw for Jay. Not long after, he brought a lawsuit against the federal government, specifically the Department of Justice, for what he considered to be internal corruption. The way his case had been handled felt like betrayal to Jay.
Well, that's ultimately where my dispute with the agency came, is that, you know, I'd spent my entire adult life fighting for the agency, trying to serve the agency, and taking every nasty assignment that came up. I was always willing to raise my hand and to go give it a try. And then when the violence came back home on me, the same people I worked for wanted nothing to do with it.
According to the Daily Wildcat article, Jay Dobbins stands at 6'1". The former football player is not a small man. But in the legal battle against the federal government, he very much was the little guy.
You know, when I decided to challenge the government, I was challenging, you know, the biggest and most powerful investigative agency on the planet in the FBI. And I was challenging the biggest law firm on the planet, which is the Department of Justice. And I was just one guy. I'm just one lowly person here in Arizona with one attorney in Phoenix. My attorney's amazing. His name's Jim Reed. And Jim Reed never backed down. He was never discouraged. He never lost faith in that we were seeking the truth. And but the process will wreck you mentally. It'll wreck you emotionally. It'll kill your spirit. It'll kill your finances. And that's how they win. That's ultimately how the government wins. They string out a losing case so long that they defeat your spirit or they defeat your resources and you give up. And that is where they underestimated me, and they should have known better based on my career and who they had known me to be, is that I was not going to quit.
Suing the federal government is not a pastime for the impatient. Jay first filed the lawsuit in 2008, 5 years after the end of Operation Black Biscuit. It would take another 5 years before the case went to trial. After reviewing all of the evidence, the judge ruled in Jay's favor in 2014. Now, if this were a movie, this is where the story would end. A humble former college athlete takes on one of the most feared motorcycle gangs and takes them down from the inside. Then, he must take on his greatest challenge yet, the government, who sent him into enemy territory. And he wins that, too. Roll credits. But life is not a movie, so the story continues. The federal government immediately appealed the decision. When I spoke to Jay for this podcast, he had just returned from Washington, D.C., where he attended the final hearing for his case. He said it could be months before he learns if the appellate court reaffirms the decision of the lower court or decides to rule in favor of the Department of Justice. The agency that has been locked in a 10-year legal battle with Jay is the same agency that ended the undercover operation because it put the agents in too much danger. I asked Jay what he thought had changed between the end of Operation Black Biscuit and the start of the threats and subsequent legal battles. This was his take on it.
I think the people that were in the highest levels of management were ill-equipped and ill-trained to handle a situation like that. They were overwhelmed by it. They simply did not understand or know how to react. Unfortunately, most of those people, most of those executives who'd risen to powers of positions of influence and had the power to do something, really were never investigators themselves. They were people who made their way, you know, up into management positions without really having a full understanding of what takes place on the street. And so they were overwhelmed by the situation and just simply didn't know the proper way to react.
Jay also wanted to clear up one thing. He still has love for the ATF. He told me that from the outside in, his case looks like an angry former employee who has it out for his boss. But that's not how Jay sees it.
Yes, late in my career, I ended up in a dispute with the agency, which resulted in a lawsuit and a pretty extended battle. But that fight was basically focused on a handful of ATF executives who acted in a corrupt way. And I really ended up doing nothing other than what I had always done previously in my life, was standing up to bullies. I stood up to the bullies. The bullies happened to be people that were running my agency. But the big picture of ATF on what they do and the men and women with their boots on the ground out there risking their life to combat violence, I have the highest amount of respect for them. That gets lost in the translation or in this big picture view of how my relationship deteriorated with the agency. But my love for ATF and my love for the people that go out there and do the job the right way, never, ever, not for a moment, was ever anything other than held in the highest regard.
While still working as an agent in 2009, Jay wrote about his time as an undercover operative. The book, entitled No Angel, My Harrowing Undercover Journey into the Inner Circle of the Hell's Angels, would go on to become a New York Times bestseller. In 2008, he published a second book called Catching Hell, a true story of abandonment and betrayal, which dealt with the aftermath of Operation Black Biscuit, the threats against his family, and his legal battles. According to a Daily Wildcat article by Michaela Fan entitled J. Dobbins, Catching Hell and Coming Back, Jay intends to write a third memoir, making his book series into a trilogy. He did not say when the third book is likely to come out, though. After retiring officially in 2014, Jay began a second career as head of the J. Dobbins Group, which puts Jay in a variety of roles. He offers training sessions to law enforcement officers on the specifics of undercover work. He's worked with directors and actors as a consultant on the depiction of law enforcement in films. Most recently, he helped with the Gerard Butler film, Den of Thieves. Jay also owns Faux Fig Films, say that three times fast, a production company that produced the short film Big Red Friday, featuring J. Dobbins as J. Dobbins, recreating one of his undercover missions. So now, let's get back to the question I asked at the beginning of the podcast. Is J. Dobbins a hero? Well, spoiler alert, I'm not going to answer that question. Labeling a source of mine a hero must be towing some kind of journalistic line. Plus, it'd be a pretty cheesy way to end a podcast. But we are going to look at what makes a hero, and we're going to look at J. Dobbins. And I'll let you make whatever kind of decision you want in the end. This true crime host is not here to judge you. So what makes a hero? Listen, I have spent entirely too much time thinking about heroes, especially superheroes. But the role of the hero has thousands of different incarnations, thousands of faces. Shout out to Joseph Campbell, the man who popularized the idea of the monomyth and the hero's journey. But there are distinct similarities. The hero is someone who, usually, starts off as an ordinary person before discovering that they are destined for something more.
I was drawn to ATF because I wanted to do undercover work. I knew I had a passion for that. And ATF had, and still has, the most dynamic undercover program in federal law enforcement. And so it was a natural fit for me because I wanted to become a federal agent and I wanted to work undercover, and I shot for the stars. I shot for the top. I went to the best program available out there, and because that is where I wanted to make my name. You know, that is where I had intended to put my dent in the universe, was as a undercover federal agent.
From there, the hero goes through challenges and temptations and transformations while on their quest. And many heroes have flaws and make mistakes along the way. I'd say the best ones do. J. Dobbins told me that he has serious regrets. During his time as an undercover agent, he had to commit to the role of Jaybird 100%, which meant his role as a husband and father got pushed to the wayside.
During points in my career, during undercover assignments, I had actually abandoned and betrayed my family in exchange for the case I was working on, the assignment, the investigation. I went all in my role, and I ignored everything and everyone else along the way. And at the time, I felt like that was the only way I could survive that situation, was that I couldn't dabble in being Jaybird. I had to be that person because it was life or death. And it wasn't something that, I would tell my wife when I would come home, on the rare occasions I would come home, I'm not a light switch. I can't turn this off and on. People that dabble in this, or people that don't take it with all their seriousness and put all their heart into it, they end up dead. And that was unfair to my family because they didn't sign on for me to be Donnie Brasco Part 2. They didn't sign on for me to infiltrate the Hell's Angels. They wanted a husband and a father. And I, you know, at that point in my life and at that point in time, I failed the people that cared the most about me.
Now, the final stage of the hero's journey is a return to the community. Jay told me he has since managed to make his relationship with his family much better.
Well, you know, my family is, to be quite honest, is much better than I deserve. I've made a million mistakes in my life, and they've given me a million and one second chances. I think ultimately what wins out is love.
Love wins out certainly sounds like the lesson we would all learn at the end of a comic book or an 8-movie-long series about a boy wizard or a hero's journey. But, you know, heroes often have heroes, too. Someone who they look up to or aids them in their quest. For some people, it may not be another person, but rather an idea or something bigger than the individual. Jay Dobbins had this in his life. For him, that guiding force came in the form of religion. While I actually did not find many articles or videos where Jay talks about this, religion has played a huge role in his life and career.
It would be impossible. I can't think of any other explanation for me to have survived and thrived through the professional experiences that I have without believing that God had his hand on my shoulder and without believing that he was taking care of me. And then, you know, we discussed my regrets, and we discussed the mistakes I've made, at least a few of them. There's thousands, if not millions, over the course of my lifetime. Knowing that I can confess those and be forgiven for those is huge for me. So yes, religion is probably the most important element, and not probably, is the most important element of my life, because that's where I go to try to find some peace.
Now, we can check boxes off the roadmap of what makes a hero all day long if we wanted to. But as I said before, Jay Dobbins does not consider himself a hero.
I am a common man who was placed in some uncommon situations and simply did the best I could to either get through them, survive them, and win in those when I could. That's not heroic. That's just a regular guy out there doing the best he can in whatever situation is in front of him.
A regular guy. Maybe that's what Jay Dobbins really is. Maybe he isn't. Who's to say? What we can say is that he worked and sacrificed to keep people safe and even donned a new identity to do so. Now, once again, if copyright laws didn't exist, this is where I would play the Superman theme song. But alas, I can't. So I'll just end with this. Jay Dobbins is just a person. An average guy. But so are you. And so am I. And as far as everyone around him knows, so is Clark Kent. From the Daily Wildcat and Camp Student Radio, this has been Wildcat Crime. Thank you all for listening. Till next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of Wildcat Crime. If you liked it and want to hear more from us in the future, please make sure to rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends. And follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Wildcat Crime Pod. Feel free to message us with questions, comments, or episode ideas. You can also reach us by emailing Vanessa O at dailywildcat.com. This episode was researched, written, recorded, and edited by yours truly, Vanessa Ontiveros. Recorded in Camp Studios. Our logo was designed by Nick Trujillo. Our music was Ghost Dance by Kevin MacLeod. Special thanks to everyone at Camp Student Radio. Special thanks to everyone at the Daily Wildcat. And a very special thanks to our guest on the podcast today, Jay Dobbins. Once again, thank you for listening. This has been Wildcat Crime. Till next time.